The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Every single Monday through Friday at 10 a.m., Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you hear Mission Minded with Michael Coleman. Michael, of course, formerly with the Jimmy Hill Mission, now with the Montgomery Food Bank. They look over 35 counties in the great state of Alabama. Great organization. This is Mission Minded, keeping our mind on our mission, our mind. Michael, how you doing, man? What's going on?
I'm doing great. Spent the last week at a conference in PA and learning the great work of Feeding America and so it was always great, but you know, I'm ultimately a small town boy.
How is that?
Yeah. Big city.
How is that city of brotherly love? And I'm not sure where Philadelphia is. It's got to be top 15 cities, right? As far as the size.
It's huge. I mean, it was so funny. I was right down there, standing by where the Liberty Bell is, mm-hmm. Ben Franklin's, where he's buried, and was just staying in a facility, and the streets are very narrow and a lot of one-way streets, and they're so narrow as it is. And then, excuse me. And people park on the streets. There's nowhere to park. It's just, it just looks like Thunderdome to me. Just no rules whatsoever.
Yeah, no
and,
doubt.
And every, I would Uber around and there were just phone calls. I mean, excuse me. That's how tired I am. It weren't phone calls. There were horns blowing left and right. And my Uber driver didn't even flinch. And I was like, does that not bother you? And he's like, oh no. You know, sometimes they blow their horn to let them know they're right on your tail. Sometimes they want you to move. But it was just part of their world. And it was a little bit too fast paced for this Alabama boy.
I got you. Well, welcome back, man. We're happy to have you here. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Whether you're hearing phone calls or horns blasting, we'll get you through this, man. I want to get into this thing we talked about last week called Waystation, which is a brand new organization and a facility for people mainly between the ages of 18 to 24, I want to talk about in just a few minutes. But we do have some emails. And again, go to info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You can leave your emails. Tabitha in Montgomery said, Elon Musk asked the question to whenever he's interviewing somebody, what's one of the most difficult problems you've ever had to work out and how did you solve them? And based on the answer, he can tell whether you're a problem solver or not. He said, if you're very intricate and you're very detailed in your answer, then he knows that you're a problem solver. And if you don't, you're probably just latching on to someone else that probably was. She wants to know, what kind of questions does Michael Coleman ask in the interview process? And do you ask anything strange?
Well, I don't know about strange. It's actually a pretty common question. You know, lots of times people say, well, tell me something, you know, give me your strengths, give me your weaknesses. And lots of times you'll say, tell me a time where you really messed something up and how did you resolve it? And there's so many things that come. I find that question really interesting. What I found is there's some people that can't talk about failure, mm-hmm. Or they can't talk about it without shifting the blame.
Yeah,
and that's very telling with somebody. If somebody can't take ownership of a problem, so for instance, if I were to say, give me an example of where you failed at something, or you know, something you really let something slip through the cracks and, you know, what were the consequences? How'd you resolve it? What'd you learn from it? All that kind of stuff. And people start talking right away about, oh, well, there was this one time this happened. And really it was because my boss didn't tell me, you know, where they start to shift right away the blame.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very telling. It can be telling about their perspective. You know, that if everything around them is somebody else's problem, then usually, they don't have to change. And I see that all the time. So I ask them those kind of questions just to see, can they take ownership? What was their response to it? Because here's the bottom line is I tell our staff all the time, you're going to fail. I already know you're going to screw up. Guess what? And I'm going to screw up. So this can't be a place where we're afraid to screw up, but which my job as a leader is to make sure I'm not headhunting because you screwed up. I want to know what do we learn from it and how do we grow from it? And so it's really important to establish that that environment that people say, okay, I'm not afraid to take ownership. But I'm also going to have to stop for a second and learn, you know, maybe it tells me I'm going too fast. Maybe it tells me I don't have sufficient processes set up. Maybe it tells me I need to get more technical in my job. You know, maybe I'm not communicating. It can tell you all sorts of things, but I'm looking for somebody who can take ownership, truly identify what the, where the brokenness is or where the broken issue is. You change your behavior or your thought process in order to correct that. And then how do you grow from that? I mean, because some people can't come out of failure.
Yeah.
You know, they start failing and they get down on themselves and then they just beat themselves up endlessly.
Yeah.
So, it, man, a simple question like that, you can pull four or five good characteristics out of somebody and it kind of gives you an idea. So that's the kind of questions that I think really I can squeeze the most juice out of, if you will.
It's not a resume or an interview is not a deposition, but I do think they kind of work hand in hand. You, explain a little bit, because if you're going in, and this could be non-for-profit or anywhere with you or anyone else, you don't want to talk too much, do you? I mean, get your answer right, but if you find yourself fumbling around and you can't figure out where you want to take your conversation, it's time to just cut bait, and maybe it's time to move on to the next question, correct?
Yeah, I mean, of course, every interviewer is different. Yeah. I mean, I've sat in interviews before, and I thought, man, I'm just seeing some red flags. You get done and the other people in the room say, wow, this is a home run. And so everybody's going to be different in how they perceive different personalities. But I really try to focus on what the job description is. And I will tell you, somebody that's going to be doing a lot of data entry is going to be at their computer a long time. I really don't want to hire somebody who's extroverted.
Yeah.
So I'm asking them questions in the interview, not just to find the answer that they provide, but just to see what their personality's like. And nor do I want to hire somebody who is very monotone and just lacking energy overall if I want them to be my community engagement person. You know, I want them to be bubbly and smile and present well and all those kind of things. So there's just so many things that go into an interview. Now, I have heard some very interesting things. I've never done this, I will confess. But sometimes just you'll be going along in the interview, and then they'll just throw you the wildest question, like something like this. You're going along, you've answered three or four questions. Then they say, if you were an apple, what kind of apple would you be and why? Yeah. I mean, something like that. And yeah. what they try to do is they try to throw you out of that mindset because you think you're ready for all the questions. So what happens when you get something out of left field and you're like, oh man, am I a Granny Smith apple? Am I a Red Delicious apple? What am I and why?
Yeah.
And they kind of test people to see how quick on their feet they are. I typically don't like to play games because I know how difficult it is to be on the receiving end. So I don't want to be a sadist, mm-hmm. but I don't want to make it unnecessarily difficult.
And the truth of the matter is, and I can point to this because I've been through it. Sometimes you can just absolutely hit a home run in the interview. And then when you get in the job, you just don't pull the mustard. I did that when I went to Atlanta. I killed it in the interview, man. I mean, I had the job. It was done. And then by the time I got on the air, I laid a big egg. But it was not a failure, Michael. It was a learning experience.
That's right. It was a learning experience. But I will tell you, one of the things I do keep in mind and I remind people that I interview with is this is the best you're going to see somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, they're putting their best foot forward. You're only seeing their resume. So you're only seeing what they want you to see. And if you get red flags out of that, you can bet there's even deeper red flags, in real life. And I will tell you, I had a guy, he absolutely took me hook, line, and sinker. I offered him the job right after the interview. I was sold on this guy. And then some bad reports started coming up. And before he came in and started the job, I was able to get out of that after doing a little bit more investigation. So it's just there's no foolproof system. It's everybody. But I think the best advice I'd give is just make sure if you're interviewing somebody, understand what you're looking for, not just skill-wise, But personality wise and otherwise, and let me tell you, just because they have a skill set listed as their strengths on a resume does not necessarily make it so. So don't be afraid to challenge people. You say you're certified in this, or you say you've been exposed to this. Give me some detail. Tell me about how you've used it. Challenge them on some of their assertions. And again, the idea is not to belabor points, but to really get to the heart and understand exactly. It's not always just what information they give you, but it's how they give it to you, how they process information, and personality wise, whether they're going to be a good fit for your organization.
He's Michael Coleman. This is Mission Minded. You can hear the show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Fresh shows every single week. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. If you'd like to leave your emails, we'll do one more email and then we'll talk about the way station. Also, of course, wherever you get your podcast, we're on every major podcast platform. It is called Mission Minded with Michael Coleman. Monica in Destin says, does Michael ever have a problem bringing his work home with him? She listens to the show. She knows she's worked with the Jimmy Hale Mission, some non-for-profits where obviously there's a lot of emotional engagement there. She works for a non-for-profit and she's finding herself that she can't shut it down when she gets home, and it's starting to affect her family life a little bit. How do you do that?
Well,
and that could go for any job, really. I mean, it doesn't have to be so much a non-for-profit.
Really,
yeah,
it really can. I will tell you, and this is more on the personal side, I've developed over the years that sometimes I can emotionally detach from things, from people and things, especially situations that are tragic. That's just a personal, I mean, I don't know how to teach. Some people are not capable. Some people are. It's a defense mechanism. I'm not even saying it's a healthy defense mechanism, but sometimes when you work in the nonprofit world, you're going to see, it doesn't matter if it's in the service industry, you're going to see the most broken people. And when you see the most broken people, you're going to see some of the most difficult stories and understand. I mean, when I've dealt with people who have grown up with sexual abuse, you know, being fed food under a closet door. I mean, when I've talked with those kind of people and the traumas that happen, and you're like, how can we live in America and know these things are going on? And so it's hard because those things, when you find out about them and you're sitting there looking at that person and you just want to reach over and just pull that hurt away from them, and share that hurt. And this is why people struggle who are able to show empathy, because even if you've not been food deprived or abused, to show empathy, you have to connect to something within yourself that feels that emotion. And when your emotions are tied to your job, rather than you just coming in and sitting at the computer and just pounding out whatever, boy, I tell you, it can really weigh on you, on your mental health, on your energy level. So the best thing that I can do is encourage people to, when they leave their work, is to find ways. So some people find that through exercising, to keep their energy up. Some people veg out at night and they'll have a glass of wine or two. Of course, I want everybody to drink responsibly. But everybody finds a different way to be able to cope with that. I will tell you, I think it's very healthy to have a friend or a support group to go to be able to talk about this. Sometimes you don't always want to dump this on your spouse because you're just coming home and just vomiting out these emotions and this pain. And that can be tough on if it's just one person doing that. And then sometimes I've just not been able to shed it. Sometimes I've just had to live with it, and it just takes time. And this is why you get so much burnout in the nonprofit world, because lots of times you're not getting the pay you need. You're doing it because you're passionate about, if you're in the food bank, you're passionate about caring for people who don't have the resources they need, child nutrition, child hunger, seniors without any resources to help them. And it drives you. But part of that is you have to go through the valley of the need. I didn't say that very well. Let me go back and put it this way. I used to say all the time when I would graduate somebody from Hope Inspired Ministries or they would, you know, that's the good times. Mm-hmm. And people would see that and go, man, I really want to be a part. They come to graduation and they get all excited and they said, man, I really want to be a part of that. That seems like really good. And I'm like, yeah. But unfortunately, you don't just to get here, you don't get to just stand at the hilltop.
Yeah.
You've got to walk through the valleys with that person on every day when it's a struggle, when they're cursing at you or when they're doing the same things over and over and you can't get to. I mean, it's all that struggle that weighs on you that makes the people who make it through and change their lives make it so rewarding. But you just can't hop from graduation to graduation. You got to take them as they are and walk through this whole process. So it's just everybody's not cut out for it. And I would encourage you, if you're listening, to really try to be able to find some ways to leave it at work or to take a sabbatical or take a break and just come up with some better coping mechanisms, because one thing you can't afford for that to do is affect your family. So I certainly be praying about that for you, but it's just a difficult journey. But those who are called to help people, that's a journey that we're on.
Yeah.
For the good and the bad.
That's some great advice there. Michael Coleman and Mission Minded, a show you can hear live right here on Tony Curry Radio. Download that TKR app. The tens of thousands of folks who've already done that, we greatly appreciate it. 10 a.m. every Monday through Friday Central Time and wherever you get your podcast. Across the United States, shelters are reporting a surge of people seeking beds and services due to inflation, the pandemic. Youth homelessness in particular has seen record highs in recent years, with the U.S. Department of Education reporting a 70% increase in student homelessness in 2018. I was shocked to hear the first day of schools here in the Birmingham city limits, only 71% of kids who were registered for school showed up on the first day. I don't know what that means. I know that we've been going virtually and certainly through the pandemic over the last couple of years. I'm not sure what that means. But they've started this brand new organization called The Way Station, which is set to open to residents in September. It's going to offer 20 beds for transitional housing for up to 2 years and 20 beds for emergency overnight stays for 18 to 24-year-olds experiencing homelessness. I'm not going to say a word after hearing that. Your thoughts?
Well, I will tell you, first of all, without speaking to their program specifically, I will tell you there is definitely a need. I want you to think about this for a second. You know, usually, now I'm not talking about, I don't come from a culture of blaming mom and daddy and all that and your parents for all your things that go wrong in life. But having been with spending so much time with homeless men and women, almost always you can trace back to where things begin to come off the rail a little bit. And there's so many traumas, childhood traumas. Now, some of them are really significant, like we've talked about, sexual abuse, physical abuse. But then there's some that are just as devastating that we don't think about. Divorce can be a huge trauma. My parents divorced when I was 7. I didn't have any friends with divorced parents. So I didn't even have anybody that could relate to what I was doing, and that was all the way back in 72. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was a different world that all of a sudden your dad's not there and there's a new woman in your life. And then your mother starts dating men and it totally disrupts the household. I've explained before, my wife, who was the third child, and oftentimes there was 4 seats at the dining table, and lots of times was told, you're going to have to go next door to Inez and Frank's because there's just no food here for you. And wow. I think she's always battled security and feeling secure and having anxiety about not having enough or not being part of a family. And we just don't understand the effects on that. And even when you come up with a stable mother and father, you can still experience trauma. Well, think about this. When you're in the foster care system, in the state of Alabama, you're there till you're 19 years old. And then when you hit your 19th birthday, you're out. And yeah. So It's like no more resources, no more place. So imagine you've been tossed from home to home. So you've gotten some probably really good parenting and some really bad parenting, probably some abuse along the way where somebody was not as patient with you. So you're just a normal, but you're city to city, school to school, family to family, total instability. And now all of a sudden everything's gone. And it's like, okay, go figure out life. And there's no safety net. There's nobody wrapping their arms around you. There's nobody helping you navigate that space necessarily. And so places like this are needed because even those who have great support networks make terrible mistakes as they're transitioning from adolescence into adulthood. And so definitely a need for somebody to be there just to help them, just to love them, but bring accountability and structure to their life to help them understand what they're going into with adulthood. And so it's really a challenge. And I think we don't have enough of those resources.
Yeah, and you know, we've talked a lot about mission statements and your ideologies when you're trying to get something off the ground like this. And when I first heard about it, I was like, well, there's the Jimmy Hill mission for people that are homeless. You know, what kind of crossover there is. But after you talked about the foster program, and I've done stuff with the Heart Gallery here in the state of Alabama, and it is absolutely heart-wrenching. You're right, because the older you get, the harder it is to get placed into a home. And you're sitting there at the age of 19 and it's like nobody wants you. And I can't imagine the trauma just in that alone and how it feels. And these aren't necessarily 18 to 24 year old kids that have addiction problems or bad people or bad students or are alcoholic or, you know, these are just people that need a chance. I mean, and I like the idea that they're willing to give them 2 years. That sounds like a long time. I know the Jimmy Hill mission was a little different. You had to do the right thing. You had to be part of the organization. You had to work. You had to pray. You had to go through your GED process, whatever it was, in order to stay in that program. You just can't use the place. But yeah, I just, excuse me, and the whole emergency overnight stays, I think, is super important too. And I know that there's a vetting process that goes through this, and that organization that you mentioned, One Roof, an agency that provides care and services. How does One Roof play into this, and how do they play into what you did with the Jimmy Hill mission?
So One Roof is an organization. Now, I'm not speaking authoritatively,
yeah.
But basically what they do is usually in communities, big communities, you need a coordinated effort through housing and urban development or HUD. A lot of HUD grants come down and you get a lot of grants that speak to the idea of helping with homelessness or helping with resources for helping for utilities and things like that. And so I think One Roof, in part at least, is that organization that it's for housing in several different areas, but they're not the ones necessarily administering the programs. They're kind of the funnel for the funds. And so my guess is One Roof's involved, that they've helped with the housing and urban development, any funding through there to help support this program for these teams would be my guess is probably how it's structured. But I just want to go back and hit on something. I've probably said this on other podcasts, but it's really just, I just can't overemphasize it enough. I'm going to give you just a simple example. You know, when my grandmother passed, it was sad, but I went back to work the next day. But imagine if your grandmother is the only one that has a home and your grandmother passes, then guess what? You are literally out of a home and she's in your entire safety net. And now you don't have anybody. So not only have you lost that and you're feeling insecure, but you need to grieve for all that you've lost. And there's so many kids, 16, 17, 18, that they are one death away, one person away from everything in their life collapsing. And when it happens, they turn to surviving on the streets. And lots of times that's drugs, using or selling. It can be prostitution. And so I really just want to encourage people that when you see people like that, it's our tendency to look at them and say, oh, well, you should just get a job or you should just do that. I really want us to try to have more empathy for people in the sense of, and more compassion for them in general, just because you don't know where they've been. You don't know their brokenness. You don't know their abuse. They've got a story. And, you know, I'm always in favor of society coming together. I'm not about just giveaways and things like that. I'm about accountability, but I'm about having a place for somebody to go. Because the truth of the matter is, if I did not have resources, man, I was headed that same way with the traumas I had growing up, and happened to go into the military, and the military helped me, and that's why I'll always be thankful for it. But I could see myself in that same situation, and my life was saved, and we can't save everybody, but man, I want to create as many pathways as possible for people who have that brokenness to be able to overcome that, and that really does take a community. Everybody coming at it, bringing their skill sets together to try to come up with the best way possible to help these people.
You know, and I think what you've done through your life is you're not a Band-Aid guy. You know, in emergency services, and people need a place to go. And I know that the Jimmy Hill Mission, you know, roughly 75 to 90% of your participants had some type of addictive properties, which is obviously a big problem in and of itself. But for people that have gone through the foster program and just at that age of 18 to 24, and I know you don't want to point back at parents, but come from broken homes, don't have somebody just to love them, and then teach them what they need to do to go out and be successful.
I even had a guy that said when he was 9 years old, was in his house and went up on his parents went on his roof, was installing an antenna. This is way back in the day. Up on there and somehow hit a power line or something, killed both of them. And so he goes from 1 minute watching TV inside to the next minute being homeless. And the aunt took him in and he said, you know, I think she loved me as much as she could, but she couldn't love me like she could her own kids.
Yep.
And we as adults, we understand that as much as we try to love and not show favoritism and all that. But imagine growing up in a household, you lose both your parents. You lose everything that was there. Now you're in a relative, and that relative may be trying, but it's just not the same as having a mother and father. Boy, that can really damage the psyche. And then if you're bringing anything naturally to the table, so you know we have people that are just wired differently and already going to have some challenges in life. Boy, it's just everywhere I turn, and it really took me back when I began to see everybody's history and then look at my own history and say, you know what? You know, if it weren't for the grace of God and the pathways that I had in front of me and the little bit of support that I had, man, I could have ended up right there on the street. So I've really learned to put my judgment aside, not my common sense, but my judgment of others. And really just said, hey, I'm just going to get in and roll my sleeves up and help those who want to be helped. If they don't want to be helped, that's on them. But you're right. We can't do Band-Aid stuff. Band-Aid stuff is the easy stuff.
Yeah.
If we're going to solve these problems, we have to be willing to do the hard things.
I can get you through the night, but I can't get you through the life. And that's so true. Yeah. Michael, great stuff, man. And thank you so much. Any more questions for Michael, send them to you. We'll read any of them. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. His show now airs 5 days a week. We got Mission Minded at 10, Adapt to Perish, noon, Damon Johnson, 3, Win in Rome with Stuart Rome, 5, Need to Know at 6, Dark Side of the Pooch, 7, Austin Hanks at 8, Livewire Wednesday, and 3 new shows starting here in the next couple of weeks. So we have got it rock and rolling here on TKR. Michael, as always, man, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you. We'll catch up next week, okay?
I enjoyed it, brother, as always.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.